Chapter 48. Chicago, a land of steel and stone and glass, where a forest of skyscrapers stretched above the ant-like actions of its citizens below. As the five women made their way through the thrusting city streets, everywhere Chicago's urban architecture dominated the view. Here there were no yawning horizons, such as those with which they were familiar, where the sun would hang in the sky like a citrus fruit above the endless fields. Here there were no fields, just opportunities ripe for the plucking. It was 2 days before the hearing, Wednesday, 21st of July. The women headed to North LaSalle Street, right in the heart of the theatre district. They had dressed smartly, many in tailored jackets, all wore hats with beribboned bands, and given the heat of the July day, they were glad when they reached the address they sought, number 134. So this was the Metropolitan Building. Even with their necks stretched back fully, they could not see its roof. The building was 22 stories high. And it wasn't just any office building. As they hesitated outside the lobby, their eyes drank in the details. The gold panelling on the walls, the M emblazoned on the ground, the building's own name picked out in solid gold letters above the door. It was all very different from the place they'd started out in this morning, that was for sure. Catherine Donahue had just about managed the journey, for this was one meeting she would never have missed. The remaining girls had formed an organisation to band together in the prosecution of their cases, and despite her fast-fading health, Catherine was its chairman. It was essential that she led this quest to secure a lawyer who could represent them. She had chosen to wear a smart black dress with white polka dots. It was the nicest one she had. She had slipped it on that morning with nervousness and some concern. That lump on her hip, she'd thought anxiously as the fabric slid over her increasingly thin body. It was definitely a little bit bigger than before. With her in Chicago were Marie Rossiter, Pearl Payne, and the two Glachinsky sisters, Frances and Marguerite. These five were representing all the litigating dial painters, including the estate of Inez Valla, whose claim for damages had been added to that of the living girls. Hats straightened, dresses smoothed, the women walked fearlessly into the lobby and rode the Art Deco elevator up to the office they required. That office was lined with bookcases full of heavy legal tomes. On the walls hung framed qualification certificates. Dominating the room was an enormous desk made of a lustrous reddish wood and topped with glass. Yet all these furnishings faded out of consideration when the women made eye contact with the man standing behind the desk. He wore a three-piece tweed suit and glasses atop his large nose. His dark hair was neatly styled with a side parting. The man was somewhat full-figured, and he had kind eyes. "Ladies," he announced, stretching a welcoming hand across the desk to greet them. "I'm Leonard Grossman." The women may have been referred to him, or vice versa, by Clarence Darrow. Like Darrow, Grossman was a larger-than-life and flamboyant attorney whose concern was for people on the bottom rung. He was born in Atlanta in 1891, making him 46 when the five women knocked on his door. His birthday was Independence Day.